Okay, and we are live and recording. Yay, Friday Night Feels. Welcome everyone to Friday Night Feels. I'm licensed mental health counselor and certified life coach, Patrick Manette. And Friday Night Feels is a show that focuses on a variety of wellness related issues, such as mental health, addiction, health concerns, stress management, mindfulness, and so much more. The focus of the show is to create connection and to be able to talk about issues that affect us all and how to be the healthiest versions of ourselves that we can be. Each show, I invite a guest co-host to join me and share their experience with wellness, healing, and growth. My incredible guest this week is Michelle Steiner. So welcome, Michelle, to Friday Night Feels.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Patrick. I appreciate that.
I'm so glad. So, Michelle, I'm so excited because every guest that comes on is such a unique story, but yours is one that I can't wait to hear it. So I get so excited. So Michelle is a disability writer and advocate. She has had disability articles published on The Mighty, Imagine the World is One Magazine, Nonverbal Learning Project, Lexia Learning, Word Gathering, and her own blog, Michelle's Mission. She works as a teacher's aide in a school and lives in Pennsylvania with her husband and her two cats. So welcome. I'm so excited to dig in tonight, Michelle.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm excited too.
So, and we were just chatting before we went live a little bit about the weather, because it's so interesting. You know, like Pennsylvania, I think New York has similar weather, but we... like the heat this time of the year is a little odd, but we'll take it.
I know. It's so warm.
I went for in New York. I don't know how it is in Pennsylvania. We were having the humidity the other day. And I was like, Why am I so hot? It's just like, you know, you just forget it when it's a little different heat there.
Yeah, that's so true, because it's so warm and humid, but before we know, I'll take it, because before we know it, snow is going to hit and then we can't get out. So yeah.
So and we were also talking about, you know, our experiences with podcasts and different experiences, and so Michelle, could you tell me a little bit about what it means to be a disability writer and advocate?
One of the things about being a disability writer and advocate is it gives me a chance to connect with other people that have disabilities.
Okay.
I have a blog called Michelle's Mission.
Okay.
And I was hesitant at first. I can still remember years ago, because writing has always been something I've loved to do. And I had a friend that told me, she said, "You really should write about having a learning disability." And I was really hesitant. I was like, "I don't really know if I want to write about that." But once I started writing, and I got my first article published on The Mighty.
Congratulations. That's amazing. Oh, sorry, you. It's like, it's amazing.
and it was just so healing. I had other people that came up and were like, "That's my story," or "I struggle with that." And it was just one of the most healing things I did. And I started sending stuff out to other places, and I was able to have my own blog where I'm able to put a lot of the just life, what it is to have a learning disability.
Wow, that's incredible. I use the word brave, and I don't know if that's the best word, but to me it is when you put yourself out there and you expose yourself and become vulnerable with the hope that, hey, maybe I can connect with other people, or maybe someone else can relate to what I'm going through.
Right, because that's the most healing thing, is being vulnerable and going out there and saying, "This is how that is," and not running from that with the stigma, because there is a lot of stigma that does surround having a disability. So just going out there, and I've been really blessed to have a lot of great, more positive experiences than negative with sharing that.
That's wonderful. And how do, I know this might sound like a strange question, but I always just like to kind of define things, because that, like you said, when there's stigma with something, it, you know, especially with learning disabilities or different types of disabilities, I think many people have many different definitions of what that actually means. So how do you define a disability?
I define a disability as something that a person is struggling with in a situation. It's going to vary from differences. It's when somebody has, they may not be able to do something. Okay. And they might be able to try that. And sometimes it might be that the situation is what makes them have a disability, and they may not face the same challenges in other places. For example, if somebody that has a physical disability, they're in a wheelchair and they're in the community and they're in a place that's not handicap accessible, or even if they are, they need to have those accommodations. So they might have a disability if they're going up a ramp or they need to use an elevator. But if they're at home, they may not face having a disability as long as things are accessible for them.
Right, right. It's interesting that you bring that up, because I used to teach at the local university, and we would have conversations about privilege. And mm-hmm. I know that privilege is taken on, you know, there's such a movement and political energy related to that term. But when I talked to my students about it, you know, I would say, how many of us walked into the classroom today?
Yep.
And how many of you used your eyes to come in? And how many of you were able to hear me today with that? You know, and just these really simple things of, it's not about that you're doing something wrong because you don't have this issue, but it's about having the compassion and the awareness that not everyone has the same abilities that we all do.
Exactly, because there's people that I often get, they'll think, when I tell them I have a learning disability, they'll say, well, you don't look like you're disabled.
Yeah.
And it's having that
confusion. Where's your scarlet letter?
Yeah, exactly. And they're looking for a lot of the things with the person that has a physical disability. And I realize a lot of times people who have that, it's more noticeable and they can't always choose their audience.
Right.
But it's having that compassion that we believe people, and that we create an environment for people who might struggle, where some things may be a lot easier for folks who don't have that particular disability.
Right. And I think that's so great that you're talking about that, because there's, I can't imagine the harshness and the challenges as an adult mm-hmm. of almost, you're like advocating for yourself of like, no, I do have this. It is real. It doesn't matter what I look like or that it's invisible to you. I still may have struggled with it, or it still impacts my life in some way. You almost kind of have to defend yourself, I would imagine.
I do, because, and I do have to defend myself, because people can't always see the disability.
Right.
And I also have this where people who have known me and I've been successful with doing things will say, well, how do you have a bachelor's degree if you have a math disability? Or if I get a random math question or concept right, oh, you can't possibly have a disability if you can do this. And
right.
Well, I might have been fortunate enough to get it right, or I might have accomplished certain things. But that's because I was able to find a way to do it. The disability,
right.
Yeah, it doesn't go away, but right. I find ways to cope with it.
It's interesting. You know, in my experience in the mental health and human service field, how old these stigmas and stereotypes are. And you're just like, how are they still surviving in 2022 that we're still having these conversations and people are still having these battles? And you know, I think of you, but I also think of, you know, families with children who have disabilities or something, and they have to advocate and fight to get accommodations or to get the support that they really need to be successful. It blows my mind a little bit.
I know. I mean, that it is amazing that certain people think a lot of things about disabilities that you would just think, aren't we past this by this point? But
right.
I find what is helpful usually is, I can't control what somebody else is going to say. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. And I try very hard with my blog to educate people on what it is like to have a learning disability. I can't speak for every disability, but I can speak about having mine. And
right.
There are some common things with other ones as well. And I try to empower people that do have disabilities to go out and to find what their purpose is, and just to encourage people with and without disabilities on just being the best that they can be as well.
Right. That's beautiful. So can we talk a little bit more specific about your blog? It sounds sure. Wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you. I put a lot of disability related material. I use a lot of metaphors to describe what it's like to have a disability. Nature is an inspiring thing for me. I love to go out and take pictures as well, because I'm not able to drive because of my visual perception.
Okay.
So a lot of times I capture details that people will miss while they're driving.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go find a picture of a flower or a butterfly. And I can, part of my disability too, lets me enhances certain features that other people don't always see. So I'm able to bring that out. Wow. So I put photography on my blog, and I also put articles related to nature. So I'll do my latest one's been about a flower that when a flower doesn't bloom, you don't get rid of the flower, you change the environment that it's in. And that's been a really big thing, because I also love to garden as well. So I have certain flowers that they need to be in the sun, and certain ones need to be in the shade. And I have other analogies, such as building a house. That's to be successful. There's certain things when you build a house that you need to have, and similar with having a learning disability, you're building on having success for that person. So I try to do a lot of metaphors.
Well, I really love that, because it's sort of like you're trying to bridge to the two worlds and mm-hmm. help the people who may not understand it or experience it. You're translating this for them. So it's something that might be invisible or really difficult for them to conceptualize into things that anyone, would have a reference point to, such as gardening or building a house. Most people can relate to that. Oh, okay. That makes sense. And a very gentle way of doing it, of educating them.
Yes, that's what I definitely love to do.
And how can people find your blog if they would like to?
Sure. It's michellesmission.blog.
Pretty simple and to the point.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Sometimes people are like, the name is like, the left moon of Venus to the stars. And I'm like, you already lost me. Like, keep it simple.
Exactly. Keep it simple.
Okay. And that's, and so I'll also put that in, for people who are looking, I'll put that in the show notes as well. So it's easier for them to find that as well.
Yes, exactly. Thank you so much.
Sure. And so that's a one component of advocacy. How do you find some of your other experiences to be regarding advocacy regarding disabilities? What have some of your other experiences been like?
Sure. Whenever I was in school, I received special services such as extended test time, having a test readily. And I also had specialty instructions to do with reading and writing. And also we attempted to do math. That didn't go as much as we expected it to do. And I used a lot of those when I went to college. Not initially, because I can remember that there was that stigma that was attached. I had a professor that suggested, hey, let's just get you extended test time. And when I started using that, I didn't do great in her class, but I was able to pass. And when I went on to school, I was a little bit older. So I went and did the extended test time. I did a note taker, and my grades really improved. And I started to advocate for myself. I would go up and talk to my professors if they were new at the end of every semester, and just told them I had a learning disability, and most of them understood. There was always one that didn't quite get it, but we were able to work through what we needed to do and get through the class. So school has been a way of advocating for myself. Also at work, that's been really important to advocate. I'm really lucky. I finally found an employer that is really understanding about having a disability. I can tell them, okay, I can't do math, but I can help out with English or history. I'm also really good at helping out kids with spelling words, but they know not to ask me with math. I remember I had a little girl that couldn't understand when I was working in a first grade classroom why I couldn't do math. And I said, oh, I'm just really not good at math. And she said, there's grown-up school for math.
The children.
And that just made me laugh. And I've also had older kids, and some of them would try to challenge me a little bit on that. And I just try to keep it simple and just say, well, I'm not good. God just didn't give me that ability to do math. And one of the most touching things was there was a girl in the class that said, well, that's me too. I struggle with math. And I do meet other students that they have disabilities and they struggle with certain things. And it's that connection you can make. And sometimes you don't have to always disclose or come right out and say, I have a disability, but you can encourage them to advocate for themselves in the classroom.
Right. And I can just imagine the power that has for a little kid to have an adult, because there is that, I mean, the differentiation of power, right? Of saying, normalizing it and saying, oh my gosh, an adult has this. That's powerful.
Yep. Because I think everybody needs to know we're not perfect and everybody needs help and everyone has things that they're good at and everyone has things that they struggle with as well.
Right. And I think, what I heard a lot from parents too is COVID, when everything was so heavy and the distant learning, it did well for some people, but it really, for people with other limitations or disabilities, it was such a significant struggle because you weren't having that interpersonal connection. Every family was dealing with intense stress that they had never dealt with before.
Exactly. They were dealing with a lot of stress. And some of the services, it's really hard to provide that over a computer screen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our students with disabilities, they do really well with coming into the classroom a lot better. And just a lot of the families, they need that support of having that as well.
Yeah. It must have just been so hard.
Yeah. So it was difficult for the students. It was difficult for a lot of, the staff as well. And we just all did the best that we could do. And we learned a lot. And we're very happy to be back in person again.
I know every place is a little different. Was this the first week back for you? Or do you start another time?
Well, we did start a few years ago. I mean, we had kids that would come in. For a while, it was just distance learning. And then we would have kids come back on certain days.
Okay.
And last year we had them, they were back in the classroom and we just began back with we just started back last week, or actually this week.
We started back.
Yep. Again, for the school year. So it's nice to have everybody back again from summer break and yep.
Oh, that's wonderful. Just that connection again, I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see are some of the areas where you need to advocate for, or you see that still need work, or what would you want people to know that they may not be aware of?
Right. What I'd like people to know that where I have to advocate is if I'm in a situation that involves math or driving, if I'm out in public, I know what works for me. I know that I, with my visual perception, I can't do an escalator very well. I just can't tell when to step on. So I know using an elevator is my key thing. And I'll be out with friends and they'll forget. And they're like, we're just amazed. You just go and you use an elevator, not the escalator. And I'm like, well, this is a way that I advocate for myself. Sometimes if somebody has an activity planned and I can't make it, if my husband works, or if, it's too far away and I don't have, I might have to ask somebody, I need a ride for that. And I have a great support system who can do that right for me. If I'm out with Matt, like I'm in the community, it's always a surprise when I go shopping and how much my total is going to be.
Right. Yeah.
And I know with inflation, it definitely is a surprise for everyone, but yeah. I don't always tell the clerk, oh, hey, I have this math disability. That's why I might be struggling with trying to count out change, or if I use a card, just getting that inserted in the right way. Or if I'm out at a restaurant and I have to try to figure out a tip, I just pull out my phone and I pull up the app for the tip calculator. Right. So those are ways I don't necessarily have to speak up for myself, but I put the action forward for what needs to get done.
And was it always that way for you? Were you always able to advocate for yourself that way?
In the beginning, it was really difficult for me to do that. My parents were wonderful. They did a lot of the advocacy work for me when I was a small child. They explained my disability to me in ways I could understand, that I had a learning disability and I learned differently, but they went to my IEP meetings. I can still remember my mom was really great at explaining to other people what my disability was. But the older I got, I realized I had to use my voice to advocate for myself.
Right, right. Which is not a skill everyone develops, is it?
No, it's not. It's something that can be really difficult for someone to develop. I think it's really important that we do teach kids at a young age to be able to have that skill on how to speak up for themselves. Now, a lot of my students are able to go to IEP meetings for a certain portion when they're older. And that was not something that happened growing up, during that time. My mom and dad, they went to my meetings and they would always
ask. So you wouldn't be involved?
No, I was. That was an age where we didn't involve kids in their IEP meetings. Thankfully, I have wonderful parents who never gave up on me, and they would always say, "Okay, we're going to your IEP meeting. Is there anything you want to talk about when you're there?" And I would list my concerns, especially when we were doing post-secondary, like what I was going to do when I graduated. Mm-hmm. And my mom would go to the meetings and she would speak on my behalf. And I was just, that was really important.
Well, is there a reason for that? Do you know of why they wouldn't have the kids there?
I think it was the time period that they, that was what their trend was during that time period. It just wasn't a thing until after I graduated high school, and I can remember subbing. And there were students talking about their IEP meetings. And I thought, what an improvement that is. I really wish that I could have gone to a lot of them, because that would have given me the power to use my voice and to tell them, no, I want to go to college. I don't want to do trade school. And yes, I am concerned about math, how I'm going to handle math and other subjects whenever I go out into the real world. So I think it really would have been helpful at least to go to some portion of the meeting.
Wow, and I can imagine, if someone's a little teeny tiny, it might be overwhelming or something like that. But definitely, I think I'm glad that you're seeing a shift in that, where where it's teaching the children or the young adults to say, hey, mm-hmm. I'm part of this. That means I get to be heard and I get to ask questions. I think that's important too, for students to be able to ask questions and learn about, I'm not always going to be in school. I'm not always going to have my parents. And how right. do I advocate and when for myself?
Exactly. And when I worked one-on-one with a student, I got to actually attend her IEP meeting, and she attended that as well. And I just thought, this is definitely an improvement. Yeah.
That's wonderful. It's interesting that you mentioned in school having the different professors, because I can remember when I was teaching, and it would probably be either the first week or maybe even before, I would get notification mm-hmm. if someone needed a note taker or mm-hmm. Certain, and I have to say as an educator, that was extremely helpful for me. And to be able to say, and normally mm-hmm. the student would come up or the students would come up and meet me the first class just to let me know. And I always remember how amazed I was at that, because it was embarrassing. I mean, certain things were just like, because you could see, you're my first class. I have to have this conversation with four more professors every semester for the rest of my mm-hmm. college career.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's helpful to do that and to be accepted. Yeah, exactly. Because they don't know. And a lot of times, especially with having one that you can't see, that can be difficult.
Yes. Yes.
That they don't know that you're struggling, or if you need extra time on a test. So sometimes explaining that was helpful. And it was, I majored in community programming for Americans with Disabilities. Now they call it transition specialist. So it was a service and a special ed. So all their professors were the most understanding, kindest. So it wasn't really a battle, but occasionally when you got a professor in another department, they'd be like, oh, what is this? And why do you need this? And
they skipped training day, didn't they?
they did. And you just had to try to work with them and be like, okay, this is what it is. And that helped them, but that gave them some experience too of having a student that had a disability, what they needed.
Yeah, and I can think of, you know, a variety of where the situations that I saw over the years of teaching went from mild to severe if this was not just mental health as well, and also a physical medical potential emergency. And I remember, one semester where that happened, and it made me a little uncomfortable, not because they told me, but that doubt of, my gosh, what if this happens and I'm not going to know, what, you know, that little fear.
Yeah, like what to do, right.
But then, you know, I was so inspired by their confidence as it came mm-hmm. across of, this is just a medical condition and this is just what we do. And exactly. It just normalized it. I was like, all right, let's rock it out.
Yeah, it's just a way of life. That's the thing with having a disability. It's not anything that's weird or strange per se. It's just, it's a way of life for me.
That's wonderful. And what do you see as some of the areas that, for example, students in the college or university level struggle with? Like, what are some common areas that blockages or walls hurdles that they have to overcome?
A lot of times when you have students with disabilities, they come in like with a variety of different ones. Some of them, like you said, might have medical, where they, you know, you may not, they just might need a special consideration, but other ones will have autism, learning disabilities. Some of the hurdles, or even attention deficit disorder, and some of the hurdles that they have to go through are trying to understand the information that's being presented. Sometimes that can be really difficult to be able to understand or to learn how that professor is teaching. That can be tough.
Right.
It can be difficult for students to have sensory issues, like lighting can also affect things. I mean, being able to pay attention too can be hard for a student. Note-taking can be difficult. I had a note-taker, even though I was pretty good about taking notes. Those are some things that can be a challenge. Or students that have physical disabilities. Like, remember our college, of course, we had a lot of Americans with Disability Act accommodations, but just trying to make, for a student with a physical, that was in a wheelchair, trying to make it up a large hill, that can be a difficult thing. So everybody, you know, just has different challenges, and it's a different experience for each of an individual person.
Right. And you know, it's also, as you're saying this, it makes me think of when, you know, you are a student and you have this protection, but you're still facing the hurdles with, maybe you have an instructor who doesn't believe in disabilities or doesn't believe in your particular issue. It's like, not only do I have to deal with this, I now have to face this person who has a lot of power in my life of my grade, and how much do I risk? How much do I put myself out there? It's a struggle.
Exactly. Because I can remember I had one that told me my job choices would be limited because of my math. And that was really hard to hear, that I would have limited job choices. Wow. I also, not even with the professor, but I had a psychiatrist who evaluated me right before I went to college. And they said, you're most likely not going to go past a community college. So,
wow, thank you, sir. Good day. I will not accept.
And that stuck with me, with that stigma. Yeah. But despite all of that, I was able to get my bachelor's degree. And a lot of things that we think make sense don't always do that. Like, I've had people with the math thing. I said, let's do a logic philosophy-based math course, which I did struggle with, but I was able to pass that. And I had people saying, well, why don't you do algebra? Why don't you do this? Or people would tell me there was a class that interested me that involved a lot of projects. Well, that's a lot of work. Why don't you take this class where you just have a midterm and a final? And for me, that's a lot harder because my brain does not do well on taking tests. So a lot of times, other people have their perception on what they think is easy and hard.
Right. And also, even though in the spirit of compassion, it sounds as if a lot of the feedback was, Michelle, you're this fragile porcelain doll that we need to keep up on the shelf. You're like, I'm hungry for life and I'm going to live it. Like, I'm not going to live on a shelf. Thank you.
Right. That's so true. I just had to find a way to get there. That's what I had to do. And it wasn't maybe the same route as maybe a lot of other people took, and it might require some different turns, but I was able to be able to get there by finding the right fit for me.
Right. And that's so important too, because also, you know, one of the things too about education is when you're an educator, you're presenting the information, but you're also learning from your student. That was one of the things I loved most, was their, not only their life experience, their culture, their backgrounds, the hurdles, the strengths, the resources. That's what inspired me to teach and do it for many years, because it made me a better person.
Yes, and that's one of the things that I can remember saying at my interview for my internship. Somebody asked me, what was the greatest lesson you ever learned with working with kids? And I said that sometimes when we get somebody and a kid that will say something, and I'll think, wow, that's why we do what we do. And there's just those moments that you think, yeah, it just all makes sense. And I can remember the person, I got the internship, and she said, I never had somebody that gave an answer like that before. But we learn from our students why we do things, how things work, and you wouldn't expect it, but sometimes my greatest lessons are from the students I work with.
Yes, that, I find that to be really true too. There were a couple times what I loved was when I was teaching, there was a person whose sole, I can't remember the exact title. She was amazing. She would come in, I think it was like teaching excellence. And she would come in, if you asked her, to observe any, as many classes as you want. And then she would actually meet with the students to have conversations with them and to see without you being there of what's working in the class, what isn't. And then she would meet with you and give you the feedback. And I remember she came into, I had two different classes, and she came into one and she was in agreement with an issue. I was in agreement with the issue, and the students were, was the classroom itself was, it was in a basement and they had a large heater in it. So I had about 40 students in the class, and the noise from the technology was so loud, I used to have to walk back and forth repeating because they couldn't hear me.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah.
So I'd be like, what do you think of page 32? And they'd be like, what? And so I'd like, I would have to almost divide the class and say, all right, I'm going to give the lecture for 5 minutes. And then I got to go, I have to walk in the back, repeat the same thing. And it was just one of those things of, this is hell for some, I mean, it was awful for me as an instructor, but even for someone who didn't have a disability, for people who did have any hardships, it was one of those things that I had no control at that time, but definitely down the road, I was like, I will never teach this again, because it made it so much harder.
Exactly. Yep. And yeah, that's just how you, you don't realize sometimes
until you're in it. You don't know.
Yeah, until you're in it. And then you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, exactly.
And do you see in your, in your experience, Michelle, a correlation with disabilities and mental health related issues or struggles?
I definitely do. I can relate with having a disability with mental health, because for me, it was an acceptance. It was a process of trying to accept having a disability. I see a lot of students that they like I did for many years, they just want their disability to go away, and they have a really hard time accepting it. And we have a lot of students that, you know, struggle just with having one and just with the stigma that's surrounding it.
Right.
And we never really looked at that. I think with having a disability, how people would view that whenever I was growing up, but now we have a better understanding that somebody that has a disability might be experiencing some mental health situations with that, and to address those, and also just to get to guide them into accepting that having a disability isn't something that is necessarily a horrible thing.
Right. It's not a death sentence.
Right. And no, exactly. It's just a different way of life. And I just think that for me, accepting it, that was really, it was similar to a grieving process of somebody that passed away. Right. I had to lay down. Yeah, I went through all those stages of being sad and angry and denial, and eventually just coming around to accepting this is how my life is, and it's okay, and I'm happy.
Right. And you're going to do what you need to do for yourself and not let anyone stop you, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's also interesting too. What I've seen in my experience is the fear that parents might have to get their children tested or to even have those conversations of they don't want their children. The couple of things I hear is they don't want to be stigmatized. They don't want to just be given a label, and they don't want their children medicated. I mean, those are all valid concerns, but I think sometimes that also prevents people from doing what they need to see, all right, well, let's just find out before we put the cart before the horse, because there is an issue and we don't know what it is.
Right. And a lot of parents think, well, I don't want my child to be labeled, or I don't want them to have to I don't want them to use this as a crutch or as an excuse. Or some people might have had bad experiences with special ed services. So sometimes they might be hesitant because of that. And also, we have a very fixed mindset on what disability is. A lot of people have this image, and it's not always the most positive. And they're thinking, "Oh, I don't want my child to have that." But when we get in there and we work to advocate and to get the services and to encourage them, those people will get the help that they need. And the sooner they're able to learn about having that disability, the quicker that they're able to just have it as a part of their life.
Right. What do you see as some of the, I don't know how to best phrase this, what are some of the issues that parents face, not even so much of struggling with to get to get the information? So let's say it's clear there's this identified problem. What are some of the additional hurdles that parents or caretakers might have to face or start changing how they do things? What have you seen along those lines?
I think some of the hurdles are that communication with the school and making sure that their child is getting the services that they need. Sometimes that can be, it's important that parents and teachers work together to do that. And I think another really big hurdle that we see is when the child graduates and what does that future look like? Because a lot of services and a lot of programs, they've gotten better, but there's not a whole lot out there for students that have that. And if you do have a child that has a learning disability and they're going to go to college, that's up to them to advocate for themselves. And so right. A lot of times parents have that fear of the future of what is to come.
And how do I do the best job parenting a child who may or may not want to go to school or may not be able to work? And what do we do for them? That must be really stressful and scary as a parent to deal with.
Definitely. And to just see, well, how do we handle situations like this or what kind of jobs? And I love to encourage people that if they have a child that is an adult, to look at the services that are out there, because I think that everybody can do something. And maybe having a full-time job may not be for everybody, but there's part-time work, there's volunteer work, and that their child does have purpose and does have a plan for their life.
Right, and that it's okay to be scared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's okay to be scared and to have that anxiety about what's going to happen. And that's one of the reasons my parents really pushed a lot of independence and having experiences with regular ed classes and teachers and the appropriate things, and also to have those experiences in the community as well.
Oh, yeah. Can you tell me more about that? Like within the community, what that means?
Sure. I had a really hard time whenever I was in high school all my years with relating to other students. I was an only child for a lot of years. And I was also picked on and bullied for having a learning disability. So my parents, when I was a teenager, they would take me to there was an art program with students in a neighboring town, and they would take me there and I was able to hang out with other kids. And I didn't have that reputation that I did for all those 12 years in the school. So, and I branched out and met other people that had similar interests that I have had as a teenager. And I'm still friends with some of them 20 some years later.
Wow.
Just making those connections, but having that independence to go out and go on vacation or to go places and to do things independently and to live. I had the experience of living on my own for a few years and having my own apartment. And then I was lucky to meet my husband, but just having that independence, and that helped me to grow as a person.
Right. Wow. That's so inspiring, because I know, you know, I always say when you're in school, when you don't fit in, you don't fit in. And it's like, you know, kids can be vicious. You know, I think we all know those stories. Like, they can be, and when you're, I don't even want to say different, but when they perceive you as being different, that can really, that's where I see too, of, you know, the shame and the fear of, I don't even want to identify this problem. I want to just pretend it's not there.
Yep.
And then you see much more of the depression and anxiety, and in some cases anger and acting out, because you're being isolated socially.
Exactly. And that's what we saw a lot of. Because if you're isolated, you think, oh, if somebody finds out I have a disability, this is going to be the worst thing ever. And yes, I just want to feel like it's not happening. And I just wish, in some ways, that I could just tell that younger version of myself that everything's going to be okay, and being different, or just having an alternative way to do things isn't a bad thing.
Right. And also, I mean, you're walking your talk, you're the walking inspiration of, you're not sugarcoating any of this, which I think is refreshing. Mm-hmm. Of this was hard. This wasn't just, I didn't wake up and become an advocate like I had to go through all of these steps and live it. And maybe fall through the cracks and have all the problems and not want to talk about, but learned, if I don't talk about it, I'm going to be lost. I'm going to lose myself if I don't fight for this.
Exactly. I was really negative for a lot of years. And I just thought, oh, I have this disability and it's the most horrible thing. And once I figured out it's going back to school is what helped me, because that was a big goal, but also just learning about different parts of the aspect of disabilities is just another, it's just how someone lives their life. But yeah, I can totally get that, because there is a lot of, just that stigma created me not wanting to talk about it and wanting to run away. But once I was able to accept it, it was just a total life change for me.
And it sounds as if it was freeing when you finally said, okay, this is my truth, whether I like it or not, warts and all, this is who I am. And
exactly. This is just simply who I am. And I don't love everything that has happened in my life, but I love the person that it's created me to be.
Right. That's beautiful. And that, I think, is the best we can do, right? I mean, warts and all, like, okay, so here I am, right? And one of the things too that I have a lot of conversations with people in the world today is how important being genuine is in whatever you're doing, whether it's you know, baking bread or in educating or in therapy or, you know, being a painter or, you know, whatever it is, of just that genuineness. And how sometimes with social media, how hard that is, because there's something like the filters and this, and you get the comparison game. And it's like, I think when you really just walk your talk and just know, I'm doing the best I can, it just makes life a lot easier.
Exactly. Yep. I agree. And trying to put it in not a toxic positivity manner where everybody's, where you're always happy, but being able to put it in, you know, this is what it is like, and trying to put that in a positive or a constructive manner, I always find is helpful for myself.
And I really think that's beautiful and important to say, that it doesn't mean, I think people think, you know, when they hear the word being positive, I think that means you don't struggle or you don't talk about the bad stuff. It's like, oh no, I talk about it all. Like it's like a buffet, right? You got some stuff you like and other stuff you don't like, but it's all real.
Exactly. And that's what I try very hard to do, and to put that in the, you know, there are struggles. There are still things that are difficult for me. And there's things in the past that were difficult, but I try to put that in a way that has, there's difficulties, but there's also a lot of joy too. Right.
That's I can see that as well. And you know, I can't wait to check out your blog and to be able to share that as well. So I'm so excited there. And one of the things too, Michelle, that I've experienced is becoming an adult. And if I've met or worked with teenagers, one of the biggest things that I've learned that's powerful is just saying, high school is hard. I usually say high school is hell. Yes. And I don't want to put it in a negative thing, but you know, you're going through puberty, you're going through all these changes, you're still a kid, but not an adult, but not a kid. Yeah. And then if there's anything else, if there's family dynamics or addiction or mental health or disabilities, I think having an adult validate that high school or elementary or middle school is hard. I think there's some power there because it's like, it is hard. You can get through it. I'll support you in any way to do it. The skills you're going to learn now will pay for it. Like it'll get better.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my message. It does get better. It gets easier. It might be tough now because I think sometimes that's the understanding I have when I work with students, that it is a struggle for them. It's hard, especially when you're have that additional thing with a disability. I'm really glad that we don't often use the phrase, these are the best years of your life, because just students that have certain backgrounds, I would not go up to them and say they are, because for a lot of them, these are going to be really hard years.
Yes. And I think hearing that, if I was a student and I heard someone like you say that to me, it might take my breath away a little bit, but then I would also feel she's being real with me. And if she can recognize it, that must mean she has a plan.
Yep.
And that would give me hope. That would give me hope of I'm not alone in this, and it will be okay. I have a really dear friend of mine who's in higher education. And, as your friendship grows, you get to know each other better and just have different levels. And she works with college students, and I just know that they are so lucky to have her in their corner.
It gives you somebody to relate to, because I can remember being a kid and I didn't know that they had college students or professors that had disabilities until later.
Right. Or who understood disabilities.
Yeah, exactly. Or who understood them. Yeah. So I think that it is amazing whenever you get that connection with somebody else that they know that this might be difficult, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. And also I think when you get older too, being able to really, I mean, that's what when we were connecting, what I loved about the advocacy piece was it's learning how to, I feel, transmute your pain into how can I use this to help someone else?
Yes, exactly. And that's definitely what I want to do, is to help other people that have disabilities.
Right. And I didn't even ask, I'm sorry, I forgot that. Do you work with a specific age group?
This year I'm working with seventh graders. And some of my students have disabilities and some just need that extra help in the classroom. And it's just giving them that extra help.
Right. Wow. That's a challenging age just because of life. That's a fun age.
Oh, yeah, definitely. it can be, but I love it.
that's really cool. I have a lot of family who throughout the generations who have been in education. And it's just like, you know, the one thing that always just left me in awe was they were able to see through all of the defenses and they were able to see the students, whatever age they were, of just like, this isn't a person, this isn't a disability, this is a person.
Exactly. And seeing that person for who they are, and that's just so important. I can remember I had a friend that told me, I just hope you realize you're more than your disability. Mm-hmm. And that just, yeah, just seeing past that really helped too.
Right, right. And to pass that forward too, of saying this is just a piece of, I like using a saying, you know, this is just a piece of your mosaic. This isn't the whole picture. This isn't the whole picture.
No, it's not the whole picture. It's just, that's one part of you. And there's so much more that I see with our students that it's not, you know, it's their disability isn't their whole being. There's so much more to that. And I just want to help to see what that other part of them looks like.
Right. In giving them the chance to find that out. I mean, that's miraculous. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
There was something else I wanted to, it just jumped through my head of something you just shared. Anyway, it'll come back to me. I'm sorry. Here's what it was. Sorry. So in addition to, sorry, it's Friday night. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Sort of this. So your blog is Michelle's Mission. And yes, that is a great resource for people to be able to connect with, and they can ask questions. Are there any other resources out there that you recommend for people if they feel that they have a disability, or they feel, you know, where do people go to sort of get like the 101 on these issues?
I have found a lot of support. Like if you do go with Facebook, there's a lot of disability groups that have a lot of wonderful resources with connecting with people. I also recommend for finding a lot of great information and the connection. The Mighty is also a really great resource too, okay, where they can find articles that there are professionals who write them as well, but also people writing about those experiences with having a disability.
Oh, wow.
Those are some other really great resources that you can find.
Wonderful. So if you could, you know, give the audience one piece of advice that you would leave them with tonight, what would that be that you would want them to walk away with?
My piece of advice that I would give somebody would be not to give up on doing things. It may not always be the path, or may not always come in the package that you expect it, but to just try a different way, to know what you want and to be able to try different ways to be able to get to achieve that.
That's beautiful. I love that. Thank you so much, Rochelle. And if people want to connect with you, is your blog the main way to get a hold of you, or is there any other way that if they wanted to connect or?
Sure. I'm on Facebook for Michelle Steiner. And I also am on Instagram for Steiner 7250.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Michelle, thank you so much for coming. This has been so educational, and it's been lovely to get to know you and to hear your story. And I hope you can come back sometime and we can pick up and see what adventures you're working on.
Sure.
You know, it was so lovely having you. I really appreciate you making the time.
Oh, thank you so much. I enjoyed it too.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to everyone who supports Friday Night Feels. And just remember, it's on my YouTube channel if you want to catch it. And it's also on all the major podcast platforms. And I hope everyone has a beautiful weekend. And I will see you again in 2 weeks on Friday Night Feels. Have a good night, everyone.